Radio Sweden's broadcast in the English language were started in the wake of the outbreak of the Winter War in 1939. But of course, this was not the war in which Sweden played an active role.
No, I mean, formally Sweden was neutral in the war, but I think in reality we bowed to the wind. So in the early stages of the war, we basically went along with Germany, and in the latter stages with the Western powers. So Finland was a particular case because Finland ended up on the other side through the Russian and Soviet aggression in 1939.
We don't have details, but one can safely assume that our colleagues reported during the war that Sweden was keeping itself out of the war, adhering to a strict neutrality policy.
Well, I think it's only afterwards that the policy of non-alignment and neutrality has been charged with moral values, because after 45 there came a need to find such a moral dimension to it. And of course, we couldn't see that in the way we took on refugees, for instance, and in an active internationalism and in foreign aid and so forth. So we tried to make up for it in other ways, that we sort of abstained from the war.
Sweden, of course, came out of the war unscathed with its industry and infrastructure intact.
Yes, and that played a huge role, of course, in the economic miracle in Sweden after 45, that we had this rapid economic growth and so forth, because most of Europe was bombed to pieces, whereas the Swedish industry was ready to go on export.
Let's take a leap to the 1950s. When the United Nations was founded at the end of World War II, two of the first secretaries general were Scandinavians. The first was Trygve Lie of Norway, who was followed by Sweden's Dag Hammarskjöld. And this was how Radio Sweden reported when Hammarskjöld left for New York to assume his post in April 1953.
The newly elected United Nations Secretary General Dag Hammarskjöld left Sweden today by air for New York. In the morning at a cabinet meeting, he resigned his post as Undersecretary in the Swedish Foreign Office. And the King of Sweden, who was present, wished him good luck. At Stockholm Airport, members of the Swedish government and the American ambassador were there to see him off.
This was, of course, a Secretary General who left a clear legacy at the world body.
Yes, Hammarskjöld was an amazing character, of course. That period when he was Secretary General, in some ways it should have been the worst period of the United Nations, but it actually turned out to be one of the best periods. Because he managed to speak straight with Khrushchev, and in the same time he cleansed the UN building of snooping FBI agents and so on. So he kept his integrity and the integrity of the United Nations, and he invented the peacekeeping forces and lots of things like that in a very tough time.
The Swedish development model has its roots in the 1950s and 60s. And the main foundation for the system was laid during the leadership of Prime Minister Tage Erlander, who held the reins of power for nearly a quarter of a century, from the middle of the 1940s onward. Tage Erlander visited the US in 1965 and recorded this message for Radio Sweden as he prepared to travel across the Atlantic.
The impulse to visit the United States this spring was given me through an invitation from Rockford, Illinois, a well-known center of Swedish immigration. I am really glad of this opportunity to meet kinsmen in America and to convey to them greetings from the old country.
It is safe to assume that stories about the Swedish model are the ones which dominated our broadcasts. The Swedish development model was, of course, looked upon by many countries as exemplary.
Yes, there was a crisis in the 90s, as you well know, for the Swedish model. But I think now it's really back on track. And if you look at the political landscape, we've never had such consensus concerning the welfare model, because now we have all parties, basically, from the left to the right, agreeing upon it. So it's stronger than ever in that sense, but it also needs some reform probably, but we'll have to wait for that.
In the 1970s and 80s, we reported extensively about Sweden playing the role of the voice of small nations. One man in particular was closely associated with it, the late Prime Minister Olof Palme. Sweden followed strictly a policy of non-alignment during the Cold War, but that did not stop Palme from criticizing both superpowers of the day. This is how he saw it himself.
Neutrality doesn't condemn us to be silent. It rather puts an obligation on us to defend the rights of small nations to live. And therefore, when we have said something in international questions, it has very often just concerned the rights of small nations. Therefore, we protested very strongly against the invasion of the Soviet Union in Czechoslovakia. And therefore, we have protested now against the American invasion in Cambodia.
This was a politician who was much larger than his country.
Well, he was also, like Hammarskjöld, a huge figure on the international stage, and there was also similarities with Hammarskjöld, that it was actually in the United States that he sort of got his calling, if you like to put it that way. He came there as a student in 1948, and I think maybe the image of Palme is a bit unfair in some ways, because he was very influenced by the United States and Western democracy, but because of the process of decolonization and the Vietnam War in particular, he ended up on the other side, so to speak, in the public image, which was a bit misleading in a way, I think.
You are tuned to Radio Sweden International, broadcasting from Stockholm. Our regular program schedule for broadcast on this frequency at this time is not coming to you because of the assassination Friday night in Stockholm of the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme.
The murder of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme was in the middle of a Stockholm street in 1986 was an event which shocked not only Sweden but the entire world.
Definitely so, and especially for Sweden, it was sort of a wake-up call that we were living in the real world because we had been so favored in the past. And I think in many ways the killing hasn't really been put behind yet because we, you know, the killer hasn't been convicted for one thing, and we've had all these political complications afterwards, which are still with us, I think.
And the same fate was to await another prominent politician, Foreign Minister Anna Lindh, when she was murdered in one of Stockholm's most fashionable shops in 2003. And this is how people on the streets reacted to her murder.
It's terrible, I think, because she's a great politician, yeah.
And she's a woman.
She's a strong, young woman who's come a long way.
We had a society where even high political persons could walk around in a town, but not anymore.
I'm somewhat indifferent to it. She wasn't really important for me, but of course it's tragic for her and her family.
I am completely shocked. The politician I admire so much, and she was a hope for the future. And now it's terrible.
Another Swedish politician who took center stage in international relations was the present Foreign Minister, Carl Bildt, who served as the United Nations representative during the Balkan crisis. And he made it clear during the negotiations that there was no alternative to compromise and accepting each other's differences.
Gradually, we must start to create the conditions for bringing back together what must come back together for peace to last and for justice to be created for each and everyone in this Bosnia, Bosnian Muslims, Bosnian Serbs, Bosnian Croats, a country for all.
Wood reported, of course, regularly on his mission and the role he played in the negotiation process. How important was that?
The personal role of Mr. Bildt?
Indeed.
It's very hard to tell, I think, from the sidelines, but apparently things cooled down and he got part of the credit for it, which was probably right.
Mayday, mayday. Estonia, this is Sicilia, Europe, replying on June 6th.
This is Europa Viking, Estonia. Mayday, mayday.
It happened in the dead of the night. Most of the passengers were, of course, asleep on the ferry. MS Estonia was hit by wild waves and sunk in the Baltic Sea, taking with it 852 lives in 1994, one of the deadliest maritime disasters in the 20th century, from which the country has not survived yet.
No, and there are many similarities, I think, between the Estonia disaster and the Palme killing, for instance, and other traumas as well that we've had in Sweden. Because you see time and again that we really aren't able to put it behind. You get all these political conspiracy theories and so on. And I think perhaps it has something to do with our great confidence in our authorities and in the state. And when something really unexpected or traumatic happens, it's often interpreted as a sort of a conscious plan instead of just accidents and coincidences.
There are so many other stories you reported about the fall of the Berlin Wall and end of the Cold War, Swedish membership of the European Union, as controversial as that was. And of course, another major issue in the last decades, which we reported about extensively, was immigration and its impact on the Swedish society. Our time seems to be out. Niklas Ekdahl, as always, it's a pleasure to have you in our program. Many thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Azaria Kiros there, and Niklas Ekdahl from Dagens Nyheter. You're listening to Radio Sweden and our 70th anniversary special, live from Studio 5 in Broadcasting House. Now it's back to the modern day news and a summary of today's top news headlines.